Ladies and gentlemen, it is my high honor today to introduce to you one of the greatest naval persons of this century, our President, Ronald Reagan. Mr. President.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Distinguished guests, members of the class of 2014, family and friends of West Point, today we are truly honored and I am privileged to introduce today's graduation speaker, our Commander-in-Chief, our 44th President of the United States, President Barack Obama. Mr. President.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I am so proud and honored to be here and to have a 22-gun salute.
And Josh Herbeck proves that West Point accuracy extends beyond the three-point line.
Well, looking out over your faces in this inspiring and historic setting gives reason for confidence in our nation's future.
In fact, by most measures, America has rarely been stronger relative to the rest of the world. Those who argue otherwise, who suggest that America is in decline or has seen its global leadership slip away, are either misreading history or engaged in partisan politics.
These last 4 years have been spent preparing you for, well, to assume responsibility for the protection of our country and all that we stand for. You're part of a noble tradition. America's independence and freedom since we were but 13 colonies huddled along the Atlantic coast have relied on the bravery, the good sense, and leadership of her officer corps.
Social media makes it impossible to ignore the continuation of sectarian conflicts and failing states and popular uprisings that might have received only passing notice a generation ago.
We've leaned heavily on men of the sea, on our Navy and Marine Corps. Your careers will be no less significant to future generations of Americans than those of past naval heroes. You will hear during your career, as I've heard during times in my life, that maintaining the military at peak readiness, keeping our forces trained and supplied with the best weapons and equipment, is too costly. Well, I say it is too costly for America not to be prepared.
It will be your generation's task to respond to this new world. The question we face, the question each of you will face, is not whether America will lead, but how we will lead.
As presidents since Washington have noted, the way to prevent war is to be prepared for it. And as obvious as that is, it's not always appreciated.
But to say that we have an interest in pursuing peace and freedom beyond our borders is not to say that every problem has a military solution.
Well, today, as throughout our history, it is strength, not weakness, resolve, not vacillation, that will keep the peace. It's about time that those who place their faith in wishful thinking and good intentions get the word.
Since World War II, some of our most costly mistakes came not from our restraint, but from our willingness to rush into military adventures without thinking through the consequences, without building international support and legitimacy for our action, without leveling with the American people about the sacrifices required. Tough talk often draws headlines, but war rarely conforms to slogans.
During the 1930s, I saw America disillusioned by the First World War permit our military power to decline. The lack of will on the part of the Western democracies encouraged the totalitarians of that day. Churchill called what followed the most avoidable of all wars, and it turned out to be the most costly of all wars, both in terms of resources and in terms of human suffering.
And I would betray my duty to you and to the country we love if I ever sent you into harm's way simply because I saw a problem somewhere in the world that needed to be fixed, or because I was worried about critics who think military intervention is the only way for America to avoid looking weak.
Many good men gave their lives in the 1940s for America's unwillingness to prepare in the 1930s. Let me promise you, as long as I'm president, that will not happen again.
But U.S. military action cannot be the only or even primary component of our leadership in every instance.
Since the end of the Second World War, American military might has been an immensely positive force in the world. We used our economic resources to help rebuild the devastated homelands of our allies and of our former enemies as well. Those people, wherever they are in this world, who have enjoyed the rights to speak and to pray and to direct the course of their government through democratic elections, owe their freedom, to one degree or another, to the protection of the United States military.
Just because we have the best hammer does not mean that every problem is a nail.
4 years ago, when you were entering Annapolis, we were putting in place a program to rebuild America's weakened defenses. And I'm proud to say that much progress has been made. I know you're ready for the Navy, and I can tell you the Navy is now much more ready for you.
In the Asia Pacific, we're supporting Southeast Asian nations as they negotiate a code of conduct with China on maritime disputes in the South China Sea. And we're working to resolve these disputes through international law.
I want each of you to know that this president understands and appreciates the job that you will be doing. Your lives are precious. You are putting yourselves in harm's way for America's sake. And I will do everything in my power to make certain the country gives you the tools and equipment you need to do your job and to come home safely.
We have faced trials that were not foreseen. And we've seen divisions about how to move forward.
John Paul Jones, entombed here at Annapolis and enshrined to the hearts of all Americans, once said, "I hoisted with my own hands the flag of freedom, and I have attended it ever since with veneration on the ocean." As you go forth in your career, the flag will be in your hands. Carry it and yourselves with pride. Good luck. God bless you, and I wish you fair winds and following seas.